This is a Triple J podcast.
G'day, it's Dave Marchese with our big chat of the week on Hack. It's good to be back after a few weeks away. And this time we've got an Olympian on, which is always an exciting opportunity for an interview. Well, I find it exciting anyway, because you get a real insight into the way that elite athletes function, not just physically, but mentally as well. And often it's on a far different plane than the rest of us. But a lot of the time, they're facing the same insecurities, anxieties, challenges that we're all facing as well. This week, we've got someone really interesting on. She's been called a lot of things, BMX's golden girl, an Australian hero. Saya Sakakibara is shining bright, not just in Australian sport, but around the world. She won her third consecutive BMX World Cup Series last month after bringing home gold for Australia at the Paris Olympics last year, which was always her dream. But Saya's journey to greatness in this sport that she is obsessed with has been complicated, because there was a time not too long ago when she thought she wouldn't be able to keep going. She was going to give it all up because she was terrified. And for good reason. Her brother Kai almost died in an horrific BMX crash a few years ago. And when that happened, Saya had this choice to make. Would she pack it in and give up this sport that she dedicated so much of her life to, or push on? In this chat, Saya gets into all of it. How she felt when her brother, her guiding force, was facing death.
Crushed my world, because in that moment when he went down, I knew that it was really bad.
The fear that almost saw her abandon all of her Olympic dreams.
It was the start of a series of events that happened where I just ultimately wanted to quit.
And how she managed to overcome this horrible fear and just anxiety of getting on a bike.
I reinvented myself. I, you know, changed my helmet, I changed my gear, I changed my bike, and kind of just like started to build the new Saya, because the old Saya doesn't exist anymore.
She's written a book about it. It's called Just Go, and talks about these issues and a whole lot more. So let's get into it now. Here is my chat with BMX Olympian gold medalist Saya Sakakibara. Saya Sakakibara, welcome to Hack.
Thanks so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a huge year for you, and you don't get much rest, do you? Like, just last month you had the BMX World Cup, you've got the World Championship in Brisbane next year. How does it feel to be thrown into all of that on the back of the Olympics? It's just go, go, go for you.
It is, but it's something that I really enjoy doing. Like, this is what the life that I've chosen, and it all comes with, you know, it's pros and cons, it's always a trade-off. But having come back from the Paris Games, yeah, it was pretty intense when I came back home. And then we also moved from south of Sydney to the Gold Coast as well.
Wow.
As a family, we did that move. So it was pretty hectic few months after Paris.
Oh, so many people are excited with just how well you're doing. You've actually got your Olympic gold medal with you right now. I think this is the first time that we've had an Olympic gold medal in the Hack studio. Wow, that is, it is bright. It is gold. Is it heavy?
Do you want to feel that?
I kind of do. Oh my gosh, it is so heavy. That is not what I thought an Olympic gold medal would feel like. Do you wear this around much?
No, I don't. Like, it's something I don't look at it often. And around my home as well, I don't have a lot of BMX memorabilia. Yeah. Or I don't have like things hanging up that constantly reminds me of BMX. Like, I kind of want to just come home and just be a person when I'm in my, you know, comfort zone of like my home. So, yeah, I like to keep that outside of my home. But this one, yeah, just stays in my little Qantas little pouch that I found on the plane that was holding my socks and my earplugs.
It's so humble. Like, if someone stumbled across that, they'd literally think that was just a little, you know, amenity kit or something. You've got to be careful no one throws it out.
Yeah, I know. It just lives in my cupboard. And it's waiting for me to take it around when I go do these kinds of things.
It's very cool. I mean, did you give yourself much time to disconnect after the Olympics to really bask in it a little bit? Like, what does the day after winning a gold medal look like? What did you do?
Well, so then I didn't get back to my hotel room until about 3 a.m. And that was like doing no celebrations. Like, it was doing all the media stuff. So I just woke up the next morning with no alarm and just be like, oh, it's done. And I fucking won.
You did win. We often talk to people, Olympians, about what that feels like, the come down from the Olympics, because obviously that is a pretty unique situation that a lot of people would not have experienced. Mm. This book I'm fascinated by. Like, I feel like even if you know nothing about BMX, you'll be interested in this book, right? Because it's a good insight into the fears and the negativity that athletes are often dealing with and that you specifically were dealing with in the run-up to the Games. Was it a hard decision to write this book, to open up about all that stuff and let people into your brain?
It wasn't a hard decision at all. I knew that I wanted to do it. I've always been a huge advocate to having these conversations, getting people inside my mind and hoping to help them in some way. But it doesn't mean it didn't come with some hesitation. And, you know, it, as much as I'm so excited for people to read it, I'm also terrified for people to know so much about what went on in my brain and so much about my personal life. But there's some vulnerable pieces in there where, you know, I really open up about my, you know, feeling not enough and feeling embarrassed about myself. I think those are the ones that people will relate to the most. We're all human. We all have emotions. We all have hardship. We all go through similar things. So yeah, it was important for me to really open up, and I did a lot in this book.
You really did. And it's like diary entries from those days leading up to the competition. And I mean, even the start of the book, I'm not going to give too much away, but it like opens with the moments before you're competing at the Olympics. And it's a really powerful sense of what runs through an athlete's mind when they're at the most important minute of their career. Look, I want to go back a little bit and talk about your early days of BMX. How much did you look up to your brother Kai? Because he was also competing with you alongside you.
I only did BMX. I only got myself on two wheels because Kai loved it so much. And because my parents saw that love and passion, they were like, yeah, let's give Saya a bike and let's see how she goes. And, you know, like, I wasn't as passionate about BMX as Kai was, but I think there was a huge part of me that really wanted to be like Kai. I admired so much of his passions and his the way that he dedicates himself to the sport. And I also didn't want to be the one to give up. Even after his accident in 2022, where he almost died and had that traumatic brain injury, he still has a huge influence in the way that I think. And a lot of my success is definitely dedicated to him.
Can you talk to us a bit about BMX for those who aren't familiar with it, about how dangerous it is as a sport? Because it's full on, right? Like, it's a contact sport and you can push people and you get right in there. How dangerous is it?
Well, there is definitely a danger element to it because you have eight riders on the gate, and you go through a 350 to 400 meter course with turns, jumps, and there's no lanes. So everyone is fighting to be at the top and be at the front. And, you know, people can make mistakes. Riders can, like, collide with each other, and that can cause crashes. So, you know, as much as it is a contact sport and it can be scary, it's also incredibly rewarding because of that thrill. Because, like, riding elbow to elbow with another racer and thinking that you might crash but you don't, and you just, like, make it through, and you see a tight move that you make a really great move from second to first, it comes with so much thrill that it's incredibly rewarding.
I mean, you and your brother were this golden duo, right? The people around the world recognized or into BMX. Like, someone I saw described you as like a Disney movie, the way it was perceived by people, because it was just these two incredibly successful siblings at the top of their game. How committed were both of you to getting to the Olympics?
So committed. And I think that Kai was the leader. Our dad used to always tell us, you know, if you're going to do this BMX thing for real, you're not going to have a job. So you're going to have to make money through, you know, marketing yourself as brother and sister. And that's when we recreated this Team Sakakibara brand, and we made our own jerseys and we had our own kit. And it was really cool because we united forces and we got ourselves in front of the media, like Channel 7, Channel 9, and did these interviews as brother and sister. We got people on the journey of supporting us to Tokyo Olympic Games, which is also special because we're both half Japanese. We lived there for 6 years. I started BMX there, so it was going to be this full circle moment where I started BMX in Tokyo, moved to Australia, but then going back there to relive our dreams. So, you know, we felt it. We thought that it was going to happen. We had so many people supporting us. We were both really doing really well on the international stage, and we were getting closer and closer to that Olympic qualification that we could almost taste it.
And then what happened?
One of the last qualifications, Kai had a huge accident where he had a traumatic brain injury and crushed my world because we were both trying to qualify for the Tokyo Olympic Games. And in that moment when he went down, I knew that it was really bad, but I was more thinking about how does this impact his chances of going to the games? Like, oh, he's probably not going to be able to recover quick enough.
The situation for your brother was really serious. Like doctors were warning that he might not survive, right?
Yeah, it was really scary. And definitely in the first few days, we were really unsure. But through that uncertainty, though, there was this one certainty that I wanted to go to the Olympic Games for the both of us. And it did start this fire in my belly. It might have been a brain protection mechanism where I kind of put all of my energy and focus into something else rather than something I can't control, which is Kai's condition. But yeah, I was like, if Kai's not going to go, then I'm going to go to Tokyo for the both of us. And I put so much energy and yeah, it ignited this fire and this responsibility that I never felt before. I always had Kai's guiding light to how to be disciplined and when to go to training and when we're going to travel overseas for races. And once that was taken away, I had to step up and take care of it myself and get to Tokyo for the both of us.
Did you feel any kind of guilt at all, the fact that you were able to keep going with this journey to the Olympics when your brother wasn't?
I think initially no, because I knew that he wasn't able to. Kai wouldn't want me to give up because of him, and he's the one who instilled in me that I should never give up, and that is definitely never an option.
So what ended up happening in terms of Tokyo? You get to the games, how does it pan out?
Really weird. I didn't know what to expect. It's a COVID game, so there was no one in the grandstands. And when I lined up for my race, I realized that I hadn't raced for over a year. So I had been out of touch. What is my routine? What is my mental thought process? And I also didn't have the ability to race against these girls from international because I wasn't able to travel to go to the World Cups beforehand. So I was like super out of touch from racing in this new crazy high pressure moment, knowing that it's the Olympic Games, but then there's no people in the stands and all this weird thing. I'm racing to my best potential and then got taken out with another USA racer, and that's when I went down and had a concussion and my Olympic dream was over.
How did that feel?
It was hard, definitely, because I never really prepared myself for the fact that it might not go well. And I think looking back, it was definitely my first ever big setback. I had never cared about a race so much. I never worked so hard towards a race so much that when it all didn't go to plan, I wasn't prepared for it. I didn't know how to manage it. All I could think of was like, when's the next race where I can redeem myself? When is the next race where I can prove to the world that I deserved a medal? Even if I didn't, well, I felt like I deserved one because of all the hard work in that I put in. So it was, yeah, this push and pull of wanting to get back, but then also managing concussion symptoms as well that were prolonging for longer than 2 weeks that I've never experienced before in my life. It was the start of a series of events that happened where I just ultimately wanted to quit.
It's a pretty scary situation to be in. And in the book, you talk about your fear of even competing at all. What kind of fear were you feeling? Like, were you thinking a lot about Kai, your brother, about his injury? Like, what was it that was really scaring you?
Getting hurt it's not fun.
Were you worried that it would happen to you? What happened to him?
Yeah, I think so. And more so the fact that I've had many concussions in the past and knowing that we only have one brain and how important it is to protect it. And I've seen what the worst case scenario could do, and it was living under my roof, knowing what his crash and his accident put me through and put what my parents through. I was terrified of, for the scenario, if something happened to me, what my parents will have to go through again. So there was so much fear that was disguised as logic. I was thinking about my long-term health. I was thinking about my parents. I was thinking about my purpose in life. But ultimately, I was just really scared of crashing. And it felt like every time I was on the gate for a race, you know, I could just see it playing out terribly all the time, me on the ground and me in the medical tent. So when I crossed the finish line and I'm upright, it was just like a surprise of like, oh my gosh, I made it. I survived. And racing like that, coming into each race like that, was absolutely exhausting. And it definitely sucked away a lot of the fun and the enjoyment that BMX used to bring. I ended up on the ground again, hitting my head again, only 11 months after Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And that was when I instantly knew, when I woke up, when I came to from knocking myself out, that I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to come back from this, because of how hard it was to get back on the bike, get the confidence to get back on the bike to race again. And it just felt like it was like the final knock, and I was not going to be able to get back up. That's when I wanted to quit, for sure.
But you did get back up, and you not only kept going, but you reached the apex of your dreams. Like, this is exactly what you'd been after at the Paris Olympics. You took home a gold. How did you get there? Like, how did you move past all of that fear and trauma and uncertainty and keep going?
Yeah, that was a big question. I did so many things. My instinct was telling me that I needed to reinvent myself. I needed to stop trying to get back to who I was before Kai's accident or before Tokyo. I was really desperate to get back to who I was, but that was the wrong approach. I had to move forward with my life, not go back. So I reinvented myself. I, you know, changed my helmet, I changed my gear, I changed my bike, and kind of just like started to build the new Sayer, because the old Sayer doesn't exist anymore. And I realized that if I build a new Sayer, maybe I would be able to build a new mindset, a new set of beliefs that would make me feel confident to race again. And yeah, I just started to take those little steps. Like, it was, some of it was so insignificant, but each decision I made me a little bit more confident in myself, that when it worked out, it's like, oh, it's fine. But I know the feeling that I want to feel when I overcome this fear, and it's going to be so rewarding.
Do you reckon, this might be weird, but the fear helped you? Like, do you think that you would have got to where you ended up getting at Paris without that fear?
Yeah, 100%. After my comeback season, where I came back stronger than ever, I won the series, but I was still scared of racing. And I realized how powerful that fear was, because I was running away from it and I was running pretty damn fast. And I was like, it's kind of cool that because I was scared, it made me go faster. So I was like, okay, fear is this energy that it has the power to keep us stuck, or it has the power to propel us forward. And I realized that it can be a superpower, because look at what it's allowed me to achieve and what it continues to allow me to achieve.
Yeah, in your book you write, "My journey is proof that the toughest obstacle you'll ever have to overcome is not injuries or losses, it's you." It's pretty inspiring advice that people can take a lot from. What's now? Like, what happens next for you, Sayer? Because, I mean, some might think, okay, you got to where you wanted with the Olympics. That would be a great time, cherry on top, to pack it in and maybe explore something else. But it sounds like you're committed to this sport and you want to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, when I thought about giving up 3 years ago now, it was the feeling of not feeling like I gave it my everything. And I felt like I wasn't leaving with no stone unturned. So I still feel that way. I still feel like I haven't given it everything. I still feel like I can get faster. I feel like I can get stronger. I still feel like I can give more to this sport. And I think I'm just chasing that feeling. And once that feeling goes away, and that's when I know that I'm finished.
Do you think it'll go away?
I don't know. I can't speak for my future self, but right now I've come to the point where I have really found that enjoyment in BMX again, which I had lost in the last few years. And I've started to, even though I've won the biggest thing there is to win in BMX, I found a lot of purpose in keeping pushing myself and keep facing that fear that I really desperately want to avoid. Because I know that when I face the fear and when I overcome it, that's when I feel the most proud of myself. And it's the most rewarding thing I think I'll be able to experience in my life in this moment.
How's Kai going?
Really good. He is back on two wheels. You know, maybe track cycling was something that he could give a go. And he's just loving it. It's just, he's just so in his element where he just looks so much better on two wheels. He's training every single day. I haven't seen him so determined. You never know, in LA, he might be in the paracycling and me in BMX racing.
It'd be amazing to see and just a wonderful end to this huge story. Look, it's a great book and people should go read it because there is something in there for everyone. And it's a brave thing to do to write something like this while you're still competing. Like, people often do it after they're finished, but to do it now while you're still in that headspace, it's a big thing to do. It's called Just Go. Please go read it. Saya Sakakivara, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you so much.
Just Go, the book, it's available now wherever you get your books. Really interesting, easy read. If you've ever wondered what is going through the brains of Olympians, this is the book for you. Go check it out. I highly recommend it. That's all for now. I'll catch you next time. Hack.